Good morning, everyone. Our meeting will come to order. This is Education Innovation Policy, March 7th, 2017. We're rolling right along. For members, today and Thursday are the days that we spend on the policy bill, in addition to a few bills that had to be added. Then next week, we will meet Thursday only to hear the legislative audit report on testing. Correct, Mr. Hassett?
Yes.
Thank you. This morning I want to lead off by having the pages introduce themselves, because pages, we're going to get very busy. These are the high school pages. So our regular page, would you make sure the microphone is arranged so that, would you please come to the microphone? You're probably going to have to stoop a little bit and say your name and the school you represent. We're always delighted to have students in our committee. This is, yes, please go ahead.
I'm Jared Schmelz from Maple Grove, Minnesota.
I'm Anna, and I go to Great River School.
I'm Lucas, and I go to Roseville.
I'm Linnea, and I go to the International School of Minnesota.
I'm Zara. I go to Roseville International High School.
I'm Jack. I go to Alexandria Area High School.
I'm Spencer. I go to Rochester Mayo.
Excellent. Thank you very much for being here. And I noticed your hard work on the floor yesterday, so it is a pleasure to have you join us and learn the process. And today you will hear three bills if you stay the entire time. But if you don't, you can always review them, because we have materials available for you. Representative Jessup moves the minutes from March 3rd. Is there any discussion or corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the minutes from March 3rd are approved. Members, we're going to begin this morning with the policy bill. So I will move House File 1376 to be before the committee. And secondly, move the Delete All Amendment, the DE1 Amendment. And members, today we'll have this on the table, so we won't be doing any voting. We will hear from testifiers, and then we will hear from our other two bills. Members, I would, entitle this the Do No Harm provision this year. I know this is probably the shortest policy bill that we've had in recent years, with 41 pages, but we tried to present a proposal that would have meat in it, cover many of the bases, and yet say to our school districts, do the job that we want you to do in educating our children and being great teachers and responsible school boards and great leaders in principals and superintendents. And we at the legislature will acknowledge that instead of telling you more stuff to do. So with that, members, I've moved the DE1 amendment to be before us, and I would ask Ms. Pera to walk through it. So, members, if you would have in front of you the DE1 amendment and perhaps the DE summary, which Ms. Pera has also prepared for us, so that you can follow along. Thank you, Ms. Pera, if you would begin the process of walking through the bill. I should say the DE.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, the DE1 amendment follows the structure of the governor's bill, which was HF 1376, except for Article 5, which I will get to. Article 1, General Education. Each of these sections was in the first from the governor's bill. Section 1 clarifies the students' use of asthma inhalers, that it complies with existing statutes. Section 2 also deals with the possession and use of asthma inhalers. Section 3 adds transportation of a student to and from a shelter care facility as a reimbursable expenditure. Section 4 changes the schedule for payments of for the payments of school district non-operating aides from 12 monthly payments to 6 monthly payments. And Section 5 repeals the definition of American Indian child. Article 2 is education excellence. Section 1 is instruction in citizenship and economics. It adds those two areas to the list of subject areas for compulsory instruction. Sections 2 and 3 are related to instruction on days of inclement weather. Section 3 and the e-learning days, Subdivision 1 defines the e-learning days. Subdivision 2 allows school boards and charter schools to adopt e-learning plans after consulting with teachers. Section 3 relates to annual notice of the e-learning plans about at the beginning of the school year. Section 4 requires daily notice on days when the e-learning plans will be implemented. And Subdivision 5 relates to teacher access on e-learning days. Section 4 of Article 2 eliminates obsolete language relating to rulemaking. Section 5, state bilingual and multilingual seals provides that school districts and charter schools will recognize high school students that reach proficiency with those seals. Section 6 is shared responsibility that adds language relating to character development education. And encourages districts to integrate character development instruction into positive behavioral intervention strategies. Section 7 modifies the definition of cultural competence by adding families and educators to the definition. Section 8, school performance reports and reporting, that requires school districts to include in school performance reports information required by ESSA. And requires school districts to post reports in compliance with the world's best workforce requirements. Section 9 modifies open enrollment lotteries, and it adds a new category for priority for students in those lotteries. Section 9 defines concurrent enrollment. Sections 11 or 12, that's moving language relating to 9th and 10th grade students in concurrent enrollment into a new subdivision. Section 13 increases the number of days the department has to pay post-secondary institutions for concurrent enrollment. Section 14 codifies innovative pilot project provisions that were in 2012 and 2014 session laws. Sections 15 and 16 replace the GED test with an exam selected by the Commissioner of Education. Section 17 regulates placements of students in the classroom of a teacher who's on a performance plan. And it also recodifies a requirement that charter schools comply with the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act. Section 18 clarifies admissions requirements for charter schools that offer free preschool or pre-kindergarten. Sections 19 and 20 both add cultural competency requirements into special education provisions, into the individualized education programs, and the alternate instruction that's required before special education evaluation. Section 21 allows e-learning days to be counted, the same as days when schools are in session for purposes of calculating average daily membership. Section 22, again, relates to replacing the GED test with a commissioner-selected exam. Section 23 also relates to that replacement because the term GED test appears in the chapter on Minnesota Family Investment Program with federal eligibility criteria, so that replacement takes place there as well. Section 24 requires the Commissioner of Education to report to the legislature on resources and administrative changes that would assist schools to address the needs of students with dyslexia and convergence insufficiency disorder. Section 25 is a revised instruction relating to the GED test and replacing that with a commissioner-selected exam. And Section 26, it repeals a rule that is now in statute, the requirement relating to the GED test and that being replaced with a commissioner-selected exam. Article 3 is teachers. Section 1 that requires certain data to be disaggregated by race, and that relates to teacher and administrator preparation programs. Section 2 allows the St. Croix River Education District to receive alternate teacher compensation revenue, that's QComp. And Section 3 defines positive behavioral interventions and supports. It lists the key components of PBIS and allows schools to use character education to support implementation of PBIS. Section 4 is special education. The first section amends the existing definition of PBIS, which is in the previous statutes and the sections I just referenced, to include a cross-reference to that new definition of PBIS. Section 2 clarifies that NDE is responsible for the approval of on-site education programs for facilities licensed by DHS and Department of Corrections. Section 3 requires the commissioner to examine use of assistive technology in school districts and report to the legislature. Article 5 is nutrition, and there are two sections there, both relating to modifying duration limits for contracts between a school board and food service management company. And Section 6 is libraries. That authorizes the Division of Library Services at the Department of Education to give advice and instruction to school districts and charter school libraries.
Thank you, Ms. Perry. With that, the chair officially moves the 1376DE1 amendment. Members, now we'll hear from those with concerns or those with whatever they want to say about this proposal, whether it's positive or negative. So we'll begin with Scott Kroonquist from AMSD and have Grace Kelleher from the School Boards Association or whomever is representing them also come to the table. Welcome, and please say your name for the record and be as brief as you can since we have other bills today on our agenda. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And Madam Chair and members, I am definitely in the category of positive comments. I just really want to thank you for, as you phrased it, putting forward a policy bill with meat and potatoes in it. As you know, your school teachers, principals, administrators, boards have been incredibly busy the last several years implementing teacher and principal evaluation, world's best workforce, the new achievement integration program, and, of course, most recently, ESSA. And so they need a little breather, and appreciate your comments, Madam Chair, about respecting local control and letting them do their job. So I really don't have any further comments other than to thank you for a very solid policy bill. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Welcome, Ms. Dietrich.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm with the Minnesota School Boards Association. And we want to thank the chair and the committee for your skillful work on the DE1 amendment. Madam Chair, you define it as do no harm. We say skillful because you took some really complex issues and you struck a balance. And in that balance, you created a solution that does not, for the most part, what we have researched, does not require any new major requirements, new mandates, or new reporting on behalf of school boards. So we do appreciate that. We would especially like to thank you for your compromise in the school performance and reporting of public information. We think that that solution was almost clairvoyant. It very much mirrors what the Office of Legislative Auditor suggested, is that we just refer to the reauthorization of the Elementary and Secondary Act in calculating proficiency. We think that that is a very wise approach. We also want to thank you for your special ed technology compromise, the civics compromise, and there are a couple of pieces that we really appreciate, and that is the e-learning piece and the CTE innovation zones. So with that, I will conclude my comments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
We'll call the Department of Education forward. We'll just mix this up a little bit. Welcome, Mr. Ernie. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. My name is Adosh Uni. I am the Director of Government Relations for the Minnesota Department of Education.
And welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We're always glad to have you.
Madam Chair, first of all, I'd like to thank you and the committee for including so much of the governor's policy bill. We truly believe a lot of the proposals are common sense solutions and fixes issues that are out there that are improve the situation for our students, teachers, administrators, and our families. However, we do have a few suggestions and then just a few concerns. So first of all, on e-learning days, we did hear about this issue from the field, and we agreed that there needed to be some solution. We want to continue to work with the chair and members on maybe addressing issues around access to nutrition for free and reduced price eligible students, and then issues around access to services for students with special needs. I know this addresses access to internet and computer technology for those students in the correct manner, but the services that they need. On the high school equivalency language, we just want to remind members, and this is maybe a finance issue, but just to think about that we are going to exhaust our funding for the GED test. So when we go forward with this new model, we may want to think about increasing that in the future as we consider this proposal. On the report that NDE would create on the resources around the needs of students with dyslexia and convergency insufficiency disorder, we don't believe we need a study. I think we should maybe think about the capacity that we have at the state level and around the state to serve our practitioners and our students with these needs. So the department is very open to working with the chair and all members about looking for solutions around there. And then on the other report in the bill, we do appreciate the effort to try to reach compromise around assistive technology. We do see the effort there. Again, we don't believe that a report is necessary, but NDE truly recognizes the concerns brought forth by the advocates and the authors, and we are and will continue to commit to working with the advocates to find a solution and to address their concerns in an ongoing fashion. In terms of our concerns, it's just around the omissions from the governor's bill that weren't carried over on this bill that we would have liked to have seen in this bill. Allowing non-public schools to give multilingual and bilingual seals, we feel that's important from an equity standpoint, that all students around the state should be able to have access to those seals for the work that they've done in terms of proving that they're literate in the language and proving the capability on all four modalities. The correction to the PE standards, moving them from NASPE to SHAPE, we think that that's a fairly necessary fix. Again, with all of these, we can work with the author on these. The Reading Well by Third Grade proposal, we thought that this was a pretty good comprehensive framework for addressing the tools and systems that our teachers and students need in the classroom by bringing together what are all the existing frameworks and using existing definitions from the MTSS report developed in 2014. Feel that this is a common sense solution. We'll continue to try to work with the chair on this. The elimination of off-grade testing, we felt that this would be a reduction in testing for our students and teachers, as well as allow us to make apples-to-apples comparisons when we're looking at our proficiency and growth scores within one grade. And just wrapping up briefly, we would have liked to have seen the language addressing the online learning provider admissions. I know there was concern about the wording from the chair, and we are more than open to continue working on that. And then finally, we obviously understand there was some issues with our language around charter management organizations. We would have liked to have at least have seen a little bit of language maybe in the way of definitions around these entities. So with that, again, I would like to offer my thanks for including so much of the governor's bill. And thank you very much, Madam Chair.
And thank you, Mr. Oney. And as you know, this is a work in progress, and I am certainly going to continue to work with you and the Commissioner and the Governor's Office on some of the suggestions you've made. We do have the bilingual and multilingual seals language in the bill, however, in Section 5. Correct, Ms. Perra?
Madam Chair, there is language about the multilingual seals, but for school districts and charter schools.
Correct. With that, members, we're going to take a little break from this bill because Representative Nash has arrived. So, Representative Nash, if you would come forward to present House File 1944. Representative Jessup moves House File 1944 to be re-referred to the Committee on Job Growth and Energy Affordability. Representative Nash, it is great to have you in the Education Innovation Policy Committee. Will you please explain House File 1944, and I don't believe you had an amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I do not have any amendments. Members, good morning.
Happy to be here, and Madam Chair, I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 1944. We chatted about this yesterday at a press conference, and we're calling this VPSEO. And the idea behind VPSEO is a vocational post-secondary education opportunity. And, you know, this is going to be a work in progress. We've got some things that we know we've got to do after having chatted with the Department of Labor and Industry, but it's essentially a mentor or an apprenticeship program that will become available to high school students who recognize early on that they don't necessarily feel the drive to go to a four-year university. You know, we hear every day that there are students who want to go and work with their hands, and they know that, they understand that, they feel that that is the best pathway for them. And I think, as I said yesterday, I think we've kind of taken our eye off of that as a noble profession. And there's a lot of folks who do great things. We have people who are tile setters, welders, people who work in the trades, in building. We have great need for housing. And yet we've really kind of missed the ball, I think, in creating opportunities for students in high school to do that. And I've shared with several of you some stories of a friend of mine from high school that took a lot of the shop classes that were available back then and is now the owner of a very large earth-moving company, and it's worth like $900 million. And the message that I'm trying to drive home in this bill and the message I'm trying to help folks understand and would ask for your support is that it's a great living that you can do and make in the trades. And if that's what you feel compelled to do, we want to support you. If you want to go to a four-year university, we fully support you. But we've got students that I think don't get that message, and we want to make sure that they are getting that message. So the goal of this bill is to take $1 million in tax credits to local businesses that will work with equally distributed urban, suburban, and outstate school districts and provide for 10 school districts. Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. So it's a pilot program. We'll do 10 schools and let those students truly be hands-on learners. And that's where we'll need to work on some of the DALI things. But, you know, it's a great opportunity. I've gotten nothing but positive support from people all across the Capitol. I do have some testifiers here from the trades that would like to talk about the great need for this in our area. So mercifully, I will stop talking and let one of them talk.
Thank you, Representative Nash. And I know that you have Brad Lundell sitting there with you from Schools for Equity. So, Mr. Lundell, introduce yourself and please express your concerns or support.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell with Schools for Equity Education. And this bill generally, right, probably isn't in the wheelhouse of Schools for Equity and Education because we talk mostly about funding and taxes, but Representative Nash shared this bill with me, and I think it's a very, very important bill. Prior to my work with Schools for Equity and Education back in the 90s, I lobbied for the career and technical educators administrators, and we've seen a decimation of these programs statewide. There was a great book written in reaction to Nation at Risk was called The Forgotten Half, the Non-College-Bound Youth in America, and I think that was published back in 1987 by the Grant Foundation. So it's been 30 years where we've been talking about this issue, and what do we do with non-college-bound youth, especially as we work toward standardized testing and all of those things that are important to measure academic progress, but there are so many kids that get left behind because of they just don't get their interests met because the programs have just been decimated in the career tech area. We're all about opportunity in Schools for Equity Education. We want to make sure that kids throughout the state have access to high-quality programs. And what Representative Nash is doing here is creating a system that's going to open up opportunities for kids that are interested in doing things other than four-year college track. And in many cases, it may unlock their ability to learn math and science and things as they get into an applied setting where they can see with their hands, they can understand all of a sudden this is what geometry is all about. So I think that, again, this is a very, very good program, and we certainly do support it. So I don't know, I'm not with the trades unless you'd call lobbying a trade. So.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell. No, we don't call lobbying a trade. But it is a skill. There's no doubt about that. Welcome, Sue, to our committee. Please say your name for the record and provide us with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Nash, members of the committee. My name is Dave Siegel. I'm the Executive Director for the Builders Association of the Twin Cities. We're in full support of the initiative that Representative Nash has presented before you. I will just tell you there are two great challenges that our industry faces today. One is the regulatory burden, and the second is the labor shortage. And so anything that we can do to attract youth and young people into the trades and show them the opportunity for a great career path, we'd like to do that. You know, the average income for someone in the trades and the construction industry is right around $55,000 to $60,000 a year. It's pretty good living. Some folks make more than that. And I'm part of a consortium of about 10 or 12 construction-related associations that are really trying to address this challenge, and we feel like this bill does exactly that. So I'm just here in support and to thank you for the consideration.
Thank you very much, sir. Stick around in case there are questions for you. Are there others in the audience who came to speak to this provision who may not be on my list but represent this part of our culture? Welcome. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Alexis Russell, and I'm assistant to the commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry. As this bill currently stands, we are in opposition to the bill. We're concerned about some of the state protections it would provide young workers, and also the way the language is currently drafted, how the pilot program would align with Minnesota registered apprenticeship programs, if that's the goal. But I do want to state that the author has expressed willingness to meet with us and address our concerns. And as we look forward to meeting with him, we also encourage you to meet with the Department of Revenue and the Department of Education. So, just want to say.
Very good. Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, and as I had alluded to, I am very open, and this is something that I want to make sure we get done. We want to make sure that it's done correctly. We want to make sure that it's done so that everybody is fully bought off on it. And in our conversations, I know that the department is very excited about this. This is one of their major initiatives as well. So this is one of those opportunities where we can come together and work to make sure that all the things that need to be checked off are done and that we can get this moving forward.
Ms. Russell, could you just briefly explain your apprenticeship program that runs through the Department of Labor and Industry?
Sure. So we, in our labor standards and apprenticeship division, we have an apprenticeship program where we register apprenticeship programs for businesses, typically adults. I know the Minnesota Department of Education handles youth apprenticeship, but that is what we do. We regulate that.
Very good. Thank you. Are there others in the audience, I know with concerns, but how about anyone else from a trade or, okay? No, then Mr. Uni, we're ready for you. Welcome again. You know the routine.
Yes, good morning again, Madam Chair, members. Again, for the record, my name is Adosh Uni, Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Education. I'd like to thank Representative Nash for being so kind as to be amenable to testimony here. I connected with him late yesterday via email. I apologize for not being able to reach out earlier. And I just let him know that we wanted to work with him around tightening up some of the language of concerns our staff has around kind of aligning where we are with other programs. And some of the concerns just broadly are around will the classes here that the students take under this apprenticeship program reach all of the local CTE standards that they need to meet for graduation requirements. So we want to make sure that the assurances that are provided through the program make sure that the students meet the required academic credits that they need for graduation. And then just kind of looking at some of the program components as they match with some of the programs that we have already around licensed educators, training, safety training, and minimum hours. And we will work with the author in terms of going over those issues.
Thank you, Mr. Oney. Representative Nash.
And Madam Chair, again, I'm completely happy to do so. This is an important bill. This has got universal support, and I'm very happy to do whatever we got to get done.
Thank you. Questions from members? Representative Makewaid.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nash, I'm very excited about this. I love going to my district and bragging about work that you do.
Wow.
Right? Yes. I was actually at Appalachian High School. We were in the Fab Lab, and they have redone all the tables at Appalachian High School from their own wood and their own shop and with their own teachers. So it's really cool, and they were really excited about this. And so I'm excited about it. I'm encouraged that you're going to work with folks to get the language tightened up, but I think this is just a really great bill.
Other
Questions from members? Representative Barr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nash, thank you. This is probably the biggest hole that's missing in our education right now. We seem to be geared all around going to the four-year college, and I applaud you for bringing this forward. I hope it goes from a pilot program to mainstream in very short order. Thank you.
Representative Daniels, did you have a question? Okay. Representative Haley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Nash, for bringing the bill forward. I am co-author on this bill, and so just wanted to comment and support. And also for the rest of the committee, some of the things that the comments from MDE or from DOLE are being worked on with another sort of companion bill that I co-authored with Representative Lyric. So I'm just confident that those things can be addressed, and I think we are putting together the puzzle pieces that are needed in order to give kids these CTE experiences.
And Representative Nash.
Well, Madam Chair, and thank you so much for the time to be here today. You know, I've talked with a lot of my friends. I fish with them, and many of them are, one of them is one of the more premier tile setters in the state. Didn't go to college for that. And yet he makes a fantastic living. He's put all of his kids through college, has a wonderful life, and that's kind of the idea behind this, is that there is a great career to be had for students who know full well that they don't want to go to a four-year university, and I want to work with all of you to make sure that we get that done. So with that, I thank you very much.
Yes, and we thank you. And between Representative Haley's proposal, your proposal, and the fact that I have now codified the innovation zones, I think that we have a pretty promising future. So thank you very much. With that, Representative Jessup renews his motion that House File 1944 be re-referred to the Committee on Job Growth and Energy Affordability. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way to job growth and energy affordability.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Members, now we'll revert to House File 1376 as it's on the table with the DE1 amendment and call forth Roger Arnson from the Principals Association.
Madam Chair and members, I'm
Roger
Arnson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Association. I'm here on the list, too, to say thank you for the work in this bill. I think that the chair and the committee's done a very good job this year of setting the bar high for bringing proposals here that were ready to be included in this final product. I might say, Madam Chair, when you referenced that the goal here was to do no harm, as of yesterday, we had 2,186 bills introduced in the House, and I think there's a lot of temptation maybe not to do any harm, but to experiment. And those of us that are in the K-12 establishment, we think we ought to be conservative when we're looking at how we're going to manage our schools. We also think one of the things that isn't here, the Board of Teaching proposal that you've put forward as well, that we're very pleased about that. So we want to thank you on the committee, and I know there's a major threat in the agenda from your committee administrator here that says if we don't wrap up, we're going to be in room 300 at 5 o'clock. So with that, Madam Chair, thank you and the committee very much.
Thank you, Mr. Arnson. Yeah, that is kind of intimidating, isn't it, to be in that little room. Sarah Clark from Pacer Center, please come forward. Welcome to our committee.
Madam Chair and members, for the record, my name is Sarah Clark. I'm here today on behalf of the Pacer Center and the Coalition for Children with Disabilities. I want to express support for the assistive technology study language in the bill. As you heard last Friday, we know that consideration of assistive technology is required. We know that assistive technology, when used correctly, has a tremendous impact on the lives of children and families. We also know that assistive technology has the potential to reduce special education costs, in the long run. So we appreciate the commitment of MDE to partner with us on getting this information out, as you heard from Adosh earlier this morning. But we think that a study will maybe help us better identify, you know, the disconnect between the students that need AT that aren't able to access it currently. So with that, we think the study language will help us better identify solutions to ensure that we can better serve children and families across Minnesota. and you are all invited to visit the Pacer Center and see their Simon Technology Center in person sometime. It's really incredible work that they're doing. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Clark. Teresa Prevett from North Metro Flex Academy or others who may have accompanied her, please step forward. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Therese Prevett. I am the principal of North Metro Flex Academy. And also with me is Deborah Kranz. She is a board member at our school. I would like to address HF 1376, Section 14I. A charter school may not enter into a contract with a for-profit entity headquartered outside of Minnesota. We're currently serving approximately 155 students. I've been working in the field of education here in Minnesota.
So excuse me, Ms. Prevett, but we did not include that in this proposal. We have deleted that House file with the DE1 amendment. And you perhaps didn't notice that we did not include some of that language.
So,
but you can proceed with your testimony anyway, just to remind us of your concerns.
Okay. So to remind you of my concerns, we have been very successful with the support of an out-of-state EMO management company. And being a brand-new school, we have started out strong with the support of that, and we hope to be able to continue our work at our school, which we've now been working on for 6 months, and we're going strong, and we hope that this progress that we've made in being an innovative new school in the state will not be hampered by future consideration of not allowing out-of-state EMOs.
Thank you for your testimony. And it was your testimony that was one of the reasons that we did not include that provision that was in the original 1376 in regard to the out-of-state CMSOs. We need to work on that issue. So that is not in the bill that will move forward, at least out of this committee.
Okay.
So we still appreciate your testimony.
Okay.
Ms. Kranz, did you want to add something to that?
Just thank you.
Why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm Debbie Kranz, and I'm a board member on North Metro Flex Academy. I'm also a second grade teacher. And I just wanted to let you know that we have a very strong, skilled, independent board who are working very hard at night, and then those of us who are there during the day. And we have a beautiful school and beautiful kids and happy learning, and we're just grateful to be able to have Excel help us along that path. But we have many people helping us, so we're just grateful.
Thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Bett, too. And we'll look forward to working with you in the future.
Thank you.
To resolve some of these issues that have arisen from the original proposal, but please know that it's not in the DE1 amendment.
Thank you.
Members, are there questions for any of the testifiers or of the chair? Oh, I guess we have another. Yes, if we have others who would like to come forward, because we have time, members, we may have to recess a bit. Representative Loon cannot be here until about 9:30, so we will we'll open the floor to other testifiers. Welcome to our committee. Please say your name and begin.
You go ahead.
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I want to thank the chair and the committee for the work that they've done to create the policy bill. Two sections that we're excited about are the e-learning days. We do have some of our districts that are already working in that arena and have been successful in continuing learning on days when the weather's inclement or other things occur. So we're excited about that. And we were one of the organizations that were greatly involved back in 2012 with innovation zones, and we want to thank the chair for her work in creating an expansion of that concept to help benefit the Kern Tech area, and are very grateful that it is not a mandate-laden bill. So thank you for that work, and we look forward to working with you as we continue the session. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lindell.
Yeah, Madam Chair, for several clients today, from schools, faculty, and education, just thanks for letting the dust settle. I think other people have said for, getting a bill that has no mandates, really, new mandates, and we're very, very pleased for that. On behalf of the Minnesota Administrators of Special Education, I want to thank you for the assistive technology changes. I know that at the day we had our day on the Hill last week, and I know that many of you visited with folks from the special educators, so we're very thankful, and we'll work closely with PACER and other folks as this takes shape. And also, I've done some work with the St. Clair River Education District over the years, and thank you very much for clarifying the QCOMP for them. I think it's very, very important. It's a great area, and I think that they had a special issue there as it dealt with QCOMP, and that will be very helpful for them as they move forward. So again, thank you for all your work and putting together what we think is a very solid bill.
Thank you, Mr. Lindell. Representative Erdahl, is your question for a testifier? And is it one who's not present?
Mr.
Amoroso, you need to return to the testifying table. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Amoroso. On the e-learning, now, I am under the impression that, and maybe someone from the School Board Association or someone else can correct me, that a large number of our school districts now make up the snow days. And so the question becomes, if you're having to have e-learning on a snow day and you're also making up the snow day, are you... is that what's happening? Are we double dipping in education?
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Erdahl. I don't believe so. In terms of snow days, generally the policy either to make up or not make up or make up days for students and or staff is a local decision. Each district has the authority to determine how they are going to do that. By example, when I was in Lakeville, the first snow day, that we had, staff had to report, students didn't have to report. The second and third snow days, staff didn't have to report. The fourth day, we had to make up. It all has to be in line with making sure that if you do have days that, under the current process, you wouldn't make up, that you still maintain the appropriate number of hours as defined in statute for elementary and secondary education. If you were going to have the e-learning days, as some of our colleagues do, by example, in Farmington, they build that in to their calendar so that it's not in conflict, and I don't believe it's a double dip, because they're creating the situation that if they're going to have a quote-unquote inclement weather day, it becomes an e-learning day, and that's built into their calendar. And that's done between the bargaining unit and the board. And so I don't believe there's any type of double dipping there because it's all prearranged.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Some students might disagree with you, I'm guessing, on that. But I know that it's a local decision, but it's changed greatly over the years. I mean, when I started teaching, you never even considered making up a snow day. These were fine days for me. But it's changed over the years. And, I know that there are districts in the state that make up all of their snow days. Mm-hmm. And in that case, if they had this, there would be double dipping. So I hope that those districts are making some allowances for that.
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl. I believe this is actually, and maybe I'm not understanding what you're inferring about double dipping, but every time that we had a snow day where staff wasn't working or didn't have to make up the day and the students weren't there, the students lost a day of instruction, and the district spent $450,000, and there was no return on that investment for that day. And so with the e-learning day, you are having staff available to work with the students. You're having the students doing work. So in essence, I value face-to-face. But in essence, you are still having experience where the staff is engaged and the students are engaged, and I believe that's a positive.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, I agree with you. The changes are good that have happened over time. I just don't want to see kids having the e-learning day and then coming back and doing the day over again later. But that'll be worked out locally, I'm sure.
So, Representative Erdahl, you must have had some students whispering in your ear.
They're always in my head. After 35
because
years.
Snow day you meet usually meant when we were teaching that the students could stay in bed.
And the teachers.
No, not this teacher, but maybe you did. No, I made my way to school and made it a work day because there was always so much work to do. Representative Bly.
Thank you, Chair. I had a question from a superintendent in a smaller district about this issue. She was concerned that this puts those districts that don't have broadband or don't have the kind of access to e-learning. Could you comment on that?
Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Bly. There is different levels of connectivity within our state, and one of the things I think we've seen over the last few years, and it's even been talked about in this session, and I believe the governor addresses it in his preliminary bill, is how do we expand the opportunities for students in rural Minnesota to have the connectivity. And so I'm hoping that's something that would improve as we continue to move forward. But on the other hand, I would not want to hold back something that I believe is positive for our students because we may not have 100% penetration July 1st. But hopefully we have more penetration now in terms of broadband and accessibility with technology July 1st than we had a year or two or 5 years ago. So while the playing field may not be perfectly even at this point, I believe it is improving, and this would be an opportunity that would be beneficial to a large part of the state immediately and hopefully to the rest of the state as time moves on.
And Mr. Amoroso, the concerns that the Department of Education expressed, those dealing with special education and nutrition, do you think those are workable? I think nutrition would be very difficult, but I do know they have a concern about whether or not these children would have adequate nutrition on those days. So, Mr. Amoroso, any comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We do have many districts that provide breakfast, for students, and on an inclement weather day, though the child may not have breakfast, probably it's best that they're at their homes if we're in a winter storm warning or something like that. We get to the point where districts begin to plan these E-days a little bit more as would be allowed. I understand that, and I know that I'm sure the districts would be more than willing to explore other possible options to address that situation. I don't have a solution right now, but it is something that, once again, you have to look at how can we do something that has the greatest impact on all of the students, and do we not do something because we may not have an answer today for a challenge? I would like to take that challenge on and see if we can help all of our students have that access.
Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On the same theme of the technology, realizing some districts don't have the technology available for an e-learning day, how does the bill address individual families that don't have Internet access for an e-learning day?
Mr. Amoroso.
Or the physical laptop.
My response would be that's one of the issues that's outstanding, Mr. Amoroso.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. I would agree that we don't have 100% availability of students. Again, we've got a significant percent. In some districts, it's almost close to 100%, as I talked to some of the superintendents, and that can be a challenge. Some of the districts I know provide the laptop, provide that resource that the students can take home. Again, I know that's not 100% across the board, but I would go back to an original premise that if we wait until we're at 100% penetration in all of these areas, we probably wouldn't do anything. And the legislature probably would not have a lot of decisions to make, because very seldom do we have any situation where 100% of the students or 100% of the staff or 100% of a county is in a position to do something. And so that is something that we recognize, but I think it's something, again, that we continue to work on. And at the same time, we're providing opportunities for, I think, a large percent of the students, which is a good thing, while we continue to explore how do we improve each and every year.
You know, Mr. Amoroso, teachers and school leaders are so creative. I know they'll come up with some way to address these issues. I just know it. You know, if they decide that they want to go this direction, there will no doubt be some very, educationally appointed solutions that they'll have that will also provide fun for the children. I just know they'll do that. Representative Maquette.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And on the same theme, I just want to lift up, so I've been doing chores in special ed classrooms, and the tools that these special ed teachers have created for their students to learn throughout the day, it's amazing, but I can't imagine those tools exist at home, and so I worry that our special education students would lose that day of learning because e-learning is not really an option for them. That you know, instruction that they get in school is just irreplaceable. And then I also think about my own experience in education, and my parents both worked full-time, and so if there was a snow day, I went to daycare, or I went to a friend's house, and so just, you know, as we get to the holes, and I'm not supportive of e-learning. I think it's something that's great, and we should provide instruction to our students despite the weather that we have here in Minnesota. But I just want to lift that up, that a lot of students might not have access to this just because of who they are, where they live, and the kinds of instruction that they need. And so as we continue to think about this, I want to make sure that, you know, internet in the home or the laptop in the home might not be the only barrier to a student learning online. It might be where they might have to learn because of a snow day, mm-hmm. or what type of learning that they might need to do. So I just wanted to make sure that we're still thinking about that as we go forward with this.
And Representative Maquette, that's why assistive technology is really cool, because parents can have some of that at home. And so we'll await the report from the department on the accessibility of that. And after we saw the demonstration the other day, we know that there are tools that the parent pointed out can be used at home. So let's hope that, you know, that can take the place of a loss of learning, because indeed we want all of our children to be able to learn any day that it's considered a learning day. Other questions? Representative Konish-Gradin.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. So in your vision of this, would this encompass like pre-K, K through 12, as far as the lessons or expectations?
Mr. Amoroso, you're really on the hot seat today. we like it.
We got 22 minutes left, right?
we'll go to recess shortly.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. Again, I think that's a local decision, what each district decides. I think as we know, there are different numbers or different hours of requirement for elementary students versus secondary students in statute. And there may be things that a district believes they can do today that we may not be able to do or may do better as we move forward in terms of the e-learning with our youngsters are very, very knowledgeable in the world of technology. I think you'd be amazed if you went into a first grade, second grade classroom, the type of resources that those students are using now. So I don't think it's as big of an issue as one might think. But again, I as the chair said, I trust our administrators, I trust our staff to be creative and have these days be useful and not something that's just, you know, a waste. That I don't believe would serve anyone's best interest. But I have faith in our administrators. I have faith in our teachers, support staff to create situations that would be beneficial to the students at an age-appropriate level.
Mm-hmm. Representative?
So I'm a library media specialist, and for 20 years I taught technology skills, kindergarten through fifth grade. And those days that we had, the very cold days, it was like every Monday for how long, we had that extended week. And I can tell you the students were getting tired of it, and the teachers as well. And so in our school district, or in our school, we actually did just that. We put together some activities because the kids were kind of going stir crazy at home, the parents were going crazy, and because they had that technology skill and because we had programs that were accessible via internet, a lot of those students were able to do some of their practice and their lessons on that. I really like the fact that it's a local decision. I don't think every school district is able to accommodate all their students, but I think that it certainly has a lot of merit to it, so thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you, Mr. Amoroso, for being willing to answer some questions. Members will stand in recess till 9:30, or about 9:30.
All righty. Well, it's better now, but when she went out of school, she was just, she just, she didn't discuss, she was just you know, that was really tough. But she still has tons. She's now, you know, on a, she's got a good, you know, good paying job, so she's on a set payment plan.
Members, recess is over and we reconvene. Members, we will now hear House File 1906, and the chair moves House File 1906. Welcome, Chair Loon, to the committee testifying table to present your bill, and I will move the A2 amendment so that 1906 is in the order in which you would like it. So the chair moves the 1906 A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the bill now is in the order that the Madam Chair would like it. This bill, members, will be re-referred to the Committee on Education Finance. So with that said, Representative Loon, welcome again to our committee, and please present 1906 as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee, and I apologize for you having to do a little recess. I had a speaking engagement longstanding on my schedule early this morning, so I appreciate your flexibility. House File 1906 deals with PSEO, or post-secondary enrollment option programs, here in the state of Minnesota, and I'll quickly just describe what the amendment, the author's amendment, does. And then I think it's probably best to just turn it over to my testifier to talk about the importance of this topic and why we're here today. The amendment deletes two sections of the bill. It deletes Section 1, which deals with out-of-state post-secondary institutions. So I'm removing that portion. There were a number of concerns raised by some of our Minnesota post-secondary institutions, and so in response to that, I'm going to remove Section 1. Next on the amendment, on page 2, line 12, there's inserting a sentence that reads, a student enrolled in a charter school may participate in middle or early college program or may enroll in a remedial or developmental course under this paragraph. This simply brings charter schools into conformity with what students in other public schools or ALC school options can do. So, again, this just makes sure that there is parity across traditional public schools and our charter public schools for students taking these options. And we also, the third portion of the amendment would delete Section 3 with regards to the advisory board for concurrent enrollment. And with that, I would be happy to or I think maybe it's best if we turn to the testifier to talk about the importance of our PSEO programs and what we're trying to accomplish through this legislation.
Thank you, Chair Loon. Mr. Nathan, welcome to our committee. Please say your name and begin.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Joe Nathan. I've been a parent, teacher, administrator in the public schools, member of the state PTA Board of Directors, a local PTA researcher, and currently the director of the Center for School Change. I'll be very brief. I know you have many things to discuss this morning. This bill embodies two fundamental principles of America, of American government. First, the principle of freedom of speech. It allows colleges and universities to do what high schools currently do, which is to tell students about the opportunities and the advantages of participating in various forms of PSEO. Why should we care? Because we know that participating in dual credit, whether it's AP, Advanced Placement, IB, College in the Schools, or PSEO, has been demonstrated both here in Minnesota and around the country to increase overall graduation rates, to help close achievement gaps, to help close graduation gaps, and, frankly, to save youngsters thousands and thousands of dollars. All great goals, all supported in a bipartisan way over the last 32 years since PSEO was adopted. The Center for School Change strongly believes in a variety of dual credit programs and completely agree with the chair. This provides an expansion of those opportunities. So the first basic principle is freedom of speech, and the second basic principle is equal opportunity under the law. So as the chair mentioned, the bill allows students in charter public schools to do what students in district public schools can do, which is to participate in middle college programs. These have been very popular. These allow youngsters who may not have particularly strong academic skills but are able to take skill courses in a particular area, allows them to do that. So it allows that. It also allows students to appeal. We already have in the current law the opportunity for students to appeal to the Commissioner of Education if they disagree with the school district's interpretation about the credits they would earn. This allows them to appeal with the final decision made by the Commissioner if they feel that there ought to be an opportunity to have the extra grade weighting that goes with, in many districts, AP and IB in college and schools. So those are the two basic principles embodied in this legislation, and thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Nathan. And Representative Loon, we have other testifiers. So could we move to them?
Yes, Madam Chair, that would be good.
So we have Principal Tim Everson from International Falls. And Mr. Nathan, I know you'll stay around for questions. Welcome to our committee, Principal Everson, and say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Tim Everson. I'm the principal of Falls High School in International Falls, and I drove down last night after basketball practice. I'm very passionate about offering the very best education we can to our students, so that's why I'm here. Our high school is located approximately a half mile from the Rainy River Community College campus, and our school has been adversely affected by PSEO over the course of the last 20 years. I'm concerned about the proposed appeal of the advertising portion of the legislation because I feel that this could produce further negative effects upon our high school. This piece of legislation that's being proposed for removal was put in to protect the small school districts in greater Minnesota who are in direct competition with the local community colleges for upper grades 11 and 12 students in our communities. 4 years ago, 44% of our high school seniors were enrolled full-time in our local community college, and this decimated our school culture and climate and culture and had a very negative impact on our entire school. We've added concurrent enrollment college courses to our course offerings and have opened up our campus to emulate a college atmosphere and schedule. We're doing everything we can to maintain our student enrollment by retaining our own students. Allowing post-secondary institutions to this unrestricted advertisement to our 10th and 11th grade students to attract them away from our buildings will once again decimate our school culture. Luring our high-performing students away from our high school makes it very difficult to be able for us to offer our high-level courses to the students who do decide to stay in our high schools. In some cases, we've been unable to offer our high-level courses, so the students have to make a decision of staying in the high school and not having the courses or having to go PSEO to get those upper-level courses. It's become a situation where the haves go to the college and the have-nots get stuck at the high schools with the lesser offerings. In a time of tight budgets, the loss of these students to PSEO and the funding tied to them has an even greater negative impact on our high schools. I'd also like to address the access to computers portion of the legislation, and this has nothing to do with welcoming our PSEO students in the building. We have put a lounge in our building, and we have PSEO students who come back to visit, and it's not saying that we don't want them in our building. We simply only retain a very small portion of the state funding when they go full-time PSEO, and it's roughly 12%, and we're not able to offer full computer access to those students. So I urge the committee to take my testimony into account when deciding on the file, and I appreciate the time to address you this morning.
Thank you, Principal Everson, and thank you for making that long trip here to express your concerns. We really appreciate that. And we appreciate your school leadership very much.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.
Principals are so important. to our schools for many reasons, and we appreciate your presence. With that, I think we have some others who have concerns. Representative Lewin, I'm not sure we have others who would like to speak in support, but maybe I'll call them forward if there are. Thank you. Please come forward, and then we'll hear from others about concerns. Welcome to our committee. I bet this is a parent.
This is a parent.
Yes, we love to have parents, too. Please say your name for the record and begin.
I'm Dr. Kayla Westra, and I'm from Fulda, Minnesota, and I am dressed for traveling today. We left at 4:30 this morning to come up, and we were just expecting to listen. So when I got motioned up here, I will keep it very brief. I heard earlier you speak about doing no harm, and my daughter has been harmed by what the principal and superintendent and school board have done in Fulda, Minnesota. Because she chose to take part-time online PSEO courses, she is removed from the building and denied access first and sixth hour during the day. So she has to come and go. She's a very involved kid, so she's there before school. Doesn't matter about the weather. She's out. And that's been very frustrating. They also have the policy in Fulda that limits all students, grades 7 through 12, to 15 minutes a day on the computer. That is something else I'd like you to consider when you talk about equal access. That just means PSEO kids will only get 15 minutes a day in Fulda. The research in Minnesota shows that 1 in 6 students are in dire poverty in southwest corner of the state. And when we take away the PSEO opportunities for these kids, he talked about the haves and the have-nots. 60% of the kids that wanted to take PSEO in Fulda were not able to do so because they don't have a car, they don't have a computer, they don't have Wi-Fi, and they don't have a place to go. And so by our school being allowed to put in this policy and restrict kids in this way has really had a detrimental effect. For my daughter, it's been mostly social and emotional and additionally academic. It just takes away, for her, it's been over 250 hours that she's been removed from the school building so far this year. So I'd like you to really consider and be the voice of these kids because it's been really hard on them to be separated out. They're the top students in the class, and the school district's actually litigating to keep them out of the building. So thank you for your support of PSEO legislation that will stop these kinds of practices.
Thank you, Dr. Westra. And you will stay around in case there are questions. Thank you. Then we have Adosh Uni from the department and Roger Aronson from the Principals Association on deck. Welcome, Mr. Uni.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. I have hit the hat trick today. My name is Adosh Uni. I am the Director of Government Relations at the Minnesota Department of Education. I'd like to thank the author, Representative Loon, for the opportunity to reach out. I'm sorry we didn't have the chance to connect face-to-face, but I was able to send my concerns via email, we've said that maybe we can work on some issues going forward. So just a few concerns that we have with the builders. There's three, one rooted in the amendment, less of a concern, just kind of more be aware. So on the GPA appeal to the commissioner, we do strongly believe that this is a very local issue. Not all courses are considered equally rigorous, and they're based on different standards. Waiting at MDE or waiting process at MDE would be a fairly rigorous, detailed and lengthy process, and beyond our capacity, especially if we have a lot of students appealing to us. And so we believe that the waiting issue should remain at the local level. On the early middle college edition in the amendment, this will most likely have a cost. The early middle colleges are for students who are in alternative programs. So this would open it up to all students in charter schools. So we want to think about maybe this raises an equity concern for those students who are in district schools. Will all students who are in district schools as well be able to access the early middle child programs? Early middle college programs. So that's just something to consider. And then on the last portion on for having students who qualify for graduation incentives programs being able to attend a charter school. They are able to attend a charter school already. I'm wondering if there's an intent there. You know, I've spoken with finance staff and program staff, and we believe this language basically mirrors what students are able to do already. So if there's an intent there about accessing more funding or any other programmatic access. Maybe we want to look at different wording to something that the department's willing to provide technical assistance to get at whatever the intent is for there. But we believe that that just mirrors what current practice is.
Thank you, Mr. Ooney.
Thank you.
And finally, Principals Association Roger Aronson. And Mr. Ooney, I know you won't go far. You're good at high sticking. Welcome. Please say your name for the record and begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Roger Aronson. I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principals Association. A couple of concerns that we have with the bill, and we had the opportunity to visit with Representative Loon yesterday and talk about these. One of the major issues here appears at 11A that talks about access to computers. And that language talks about, it changes Minnesota law and says that schools would now have to provide the same access to computer hardware and software as to other students. We think that language needs a little bit of work. And just a couple things about this. This is a monster program that has grown through the years now. Annually, Minnesota sends about $34 million of K-12 money to the higher ed institutions in support of this program, $34 million. What happens here is that some of the kids are fully enrolled and some are part-time enrolled. And so the ones that are fully enrolled, they go off to the PSEO institution. We don't see them. In fact, they are actually under the PSEO academic guidelines, I mean under the secondary institutions, post-secondary institutions' academic guidelines and conduct guidelines. So they're responsible for monitoring all this stuff at that particular point. We think if they're fully enrolled in a program, and, for example, I made two notes here that Northwestern University here in the Twin Cities gets about $3.4 million. Anoka Ramsey gets over $4 million. That, frankly, those institutions ought to have the primary obligation to be providing resources to these kids that are necessary for those classes. That's a different kind of issue that we ought to talk about. That is actually what kind of falls into the language here. We drafted some amendment language on this before, and we'll talk about it. Then the second part is the kid that is not fully enrolled. And I think that the issue here is, and visiting with Representative Loon, is what happens to them, you know, during the day. And we need to have some language that says that the school district would make a reasonable accommodation to those kids to be on our school campuses. We think that actually happens in most places now, but as you've heard from the parent, it doesn't happen everywhere. And so when it doesn't happen everywhere, then it comes to you, and we need to have some solution to that. I think as you heard from Mr. Everson, they actually provide a lounge for their PSEO kids. Well, if that had happened for the full parent, we wouldn't have this particular problem. So we think we'll keep working with the author on that question and see if we can't come to some workable solution on this so that the kids are well treated, et cetera. I might say, just to bring this back on behalf of the secondary principals, and as we go further to the finance committee, which is where this bill is going, we get about $4 million a year in college in the schools. It's not an apples-to-apples comparison, obviously, with the money that's going off to PSEO. One of the unintended consequences that's a really positive aspect of PSEO is it's driven us to do the college in the schools classes so we keep the kids in these schools. It is an important mission to protect the high school experience. We really believe that, and the secondary principals believe that. And one of the ways of doing that is the expansion of college in the schools. So as you heard from the parent here, classes that aren't available for those kids in Fulda or for International Falls or for wherever else, that we make those available through the college in the schools program. So any additional support we get in that is great. So, Madam Chair, the weighting grades piece on this, we really do think that's a local issue, and a lot of boards are addressing that, and we'll leave that as we move along here. So, Madam Chair, happy to answer any questions, and we appreciate working with the author on this.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. Members, are there questions for the testifiers? No questions. Representative Loon. I'm sorry, Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not sure who would be answering this, but on the amendment, I just would like a little better understanding of may enroll in immediate remedial or developmental course under this paragraph. At a college-level remedial course, and my understanding is that students pay for those, but then they don't get credit for it if they are going even as a college student. So how does that work?
Mr. Nathan, are you able to assist us?
You heard the question.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. Under the middle college high school program, students are allowed to take remedial courses. It's only under that program that students are allowed to take remedial courses. And that's been a subject of some discussion, but that's the only exception. Otherwise, they're not allowed to take remedial courses under PSEO. So this would extend that opportunity, which is currently permitted for students participating in district schools, to allow charter public school students who wish to participate in the schools that wish to participate in the middle college program to do so.
Representative Ward.
Thank you. Just to clarify, though, that's paid for through the PSEO program, but they don't receive credit for it, or do they?
Mr. Nathan.
Madam Chair, Representative, they would receive credit, but it's credit as a remedial course.
Any other questions or justifiers? Mr. Nathan.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. A 30-second clarification. I apologize. Remedial course means that it's not counted toward college credit.
Correct.
And it would be counted if it were a college-level course, but it's remedial, so it isn't. So one other point about the appeal. This is a fundamental issue, and, you know, we need to think about, is it under principles of American jurisprudence, isn't an appeal allowed to students? And the answer is, in many cases, yes. So I respect the concerns of the Department of Education, but already there's a precedent for an appeal under the state law to the commissioner, and that has to do with disputes about how much credit students in PSEO are allowed. So there is a precedent. It hasn't overwhelmed the department. We don't see this. One last point, literally 10 seconds, and that is that there have been concerns about the number of students participating in these programs, but the fact of the matter is that about 5.5 times as many students participate in college and the schools as participate in PSEO, and frankly, we think that that's great. It's a terrific program that allows students to stay in the high school and earn college credits. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nathan. Representative Loon, closing comments on House File 1906 as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the committee members. And I think this, unfortunately, this bill is coming forward from, you know, concerns that have been occurring in our schools. And, you know, this legislature a number of years ago set out policies to allow our high school students to earn college credit, whether it be through PSEO or concurrent enrollment, or sometimes referred to as college in the schools. And, you know, some problems have occurred. One of the things that this my proposed bill would do would remove the gag rule, which was put in place, where schools, post-secondary institutions may not advertise or tell parents that these options are available to their children and to their students. And we have made it a priority to try to provide options for our students to earn college credit while they're in high school. Many of our students are capable, are able to do that. It saves Minnesota families millions and millions of dollars in the cost of higher education for their children, many families who could not afford it otherwise. So while I recognize there are some very valid concerns that have been raised, and to Principal Everson, he's written some very thoughtful and heartfelt letters about the impact on their school of having many students take PSEO, and I think with the very close proximity of their college there that has occurred. But we do need to make sure that we're providing fair and open options for all students, and that schools are not able to sort of unfairly curtail those or make it so unpleasant or difficult for students that they are discouraged from exercising their right to these educational options. So, you know, I am mindful of some of the concerns that have been raised, whether they be costs, which is why this bill is going to be sent to the Finance Committee. We'll get a fiscal note and explore some of those things. And I'm also more than willing to talk about the appeals process or other things that have been raised as concerns. But, again, I think it's important that we continue work on this measure and push it forward, because we want to make sure that we are giving all students, wherever they may reside in the state of Minnesota, the opportunity to earn college credit in our schools, in our high schools. That is something that's been very beneficial and something that I think we want to make sure continues.
Thank you, Chair Loon. With that, this chair renews the motion that House File 1906, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Education and Finance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. The motion prevails, and the bill is sent to the Committee on Education and Finance. Thank you, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members,
we'll see you. Representative Rudolph.
Just one quick clarification, please, on snow days, because when you were
We know you're sleeping.
No. When I was still sleeping, that was because I knew I had to get up and shovel the rest of the day. Where you probably were going to hire somebody to come in and do that.
I have Representative Erdahl. I have my own snowblower. And I have a very large driveway, so I did that first.
I was doing it by hand.
Thank you. No, actually, I walked. I live a couple miles out of Princeton. And I walked with my snow gear on, and so I really didn't do my driveway till later. Well, members, with that diatribe finished, we'll see you on Thursday. This meeting.